Rob Bell is a evangelist and pastor, a leader in this emerging church movement. He just wrote a book called Love Wins, and it's a book about eternal life. And he stakes out a more or less universalist position, meaning everyone gets saved. So in the end, everyone gets to heaven. And it's kicked up a controversy among Christians, because a lot of his co-religionists, a lot of his fellow evangelicals are saying this is just not a biblical teaching. The Bible is very clear on the existence of hell, the danger of it, etc. And so this controversy made the CNN website, which I thought was interesting, proving that hell, excuse the pun, is still a burning question in the culture. It's not a new question. This is a very old issue within Christian theology. Though it might surprise and dismay some people, the biblical figure who talks most about hell is Jesus of Nazareth. So look in the New Testament, you'll find lots of references to hell on the lips of Jesus. He warns again and again of Gehenna and its never-ending fire. Think of the parable of Lazarus and Dives, you know, where the rich man is separated by this infinite gulf, you know, from the bosom of Abraham. Think of Matthew 25, that sort of startling parable where you know, God will separate the goats from the sheep. And it's pretty clear that some go off to an eternal punishment. So we didn't just drag this language of hell out of nowhere. I mean, it's coming up from Jesus himself. And then as the tradition unfolds, we see this question debated back and forth and lots of different positions taken. Third century, one of the greatest theologians of the whole tradition, Origen of Alexandria, stakes out a position not all that dissimilar from Rob Bell's. Origen claimed that in the end, perhaps after a long period of trial and testing, but in the end, everybody will be saved, including the fallen angels, including Satan himself. It's a position that's called apokatastasis in the Greek, meaning restoration. All things will be restored at the end of time. Well, the church condemned apokatastasis, and it said it wasn't taking hell seriously enough. Now, in reaction to Origen, you might say, someone like Augustine of Hippo comes along, the great 5th century bishop and theologian. Augustine had a much more pessimistic approach to this question. He said that original sin resulted in what he called the massa damnata. It means the damned mass. So the whole human race is basically deserving of hell. But God, in his infinite, inscrutable mercy, picks a handful of souls out of the massa damnata and saves them. So it's pretty dark. You know, most people will be damned, Augustine clearly thinks. Now, though it's hard for me to admit this, my great hero, Thomas Aquinas, is largely Augustinian in his view on hell. He also thinks most people will be damned. In fact, Aquinas went so far as to say that part of the joy of heaven is to see the suffering of the damned, because you're noticing how just God is. Well, okay. Now, you know, I love Thomas Aquinas, but these are pretty dark views on this question. Now, come up to the 20th century. The great Protestant theologian, Karl Barth, one of the most influential of the modern theologians, he stakes out a position not all that dissimilar from Origen's or Rob Bell's. It's pretty much a universalist position that in the cross of Jesus, all people are saved. And the church's job is to announce this good news to the world. Now, one of his colleagues, a fellow Swiss and a friend of his, was Hans Urs von Balthasar, a Catholic theologian. Balthasar took in a good deal of the Barthian spirit, I think, reacted against this Augustinian and Thomistic, rather dark view on hell. Balthasar said this: we may reasonably hope that all people will be saved. You see, what he's doing is he's pulling back from Barth and Origen and from a complete apokatastasis position that we know all people will be saved. No, we don't know that, but we may reasonably hope that all people will be saved. Why? Because of the dramatic thing that God did through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. God sending his Son all the way to the limits of God-forsakenness, so as to bring back into the divine life all those who had wandered far from it. That's the way he reads the redemption. That's pretty powerful. That God the Son went all the way to the limits, even into sin and even into death, so as to bring the whole world back. because of that, we may reasonably hope that all people will be saved. Do we know it? No. Why? Because human freedom can still resist even that acrobatic act of love. Okay. My own view, having surveyed this grand tradition, my own view is that Balthazar has it pretty much right. I think that God desires all people to be saved. God has gone to the limits of God-forsakenness to effect this salvation. Can it be resisted? Yes. And that's why we have to hold to the existence of hell, at least as a possibility. See, hell or Gehenna, the fire, all that, those are spatial and visual metaphors for the state of deep loneliness that comes from having rejected the divine love. That's how I'd put it. Hell is not so much a place. We use spatial metaphors for it. It's a condition, it's a state of being. It's having refused in freedom the divine love. And it results in this terrible loneliness. We have to accept the possibility of hell. We have to accept the existence of it as a possibility because of human freedom. But are any human beings in hell? We don't know. We don't know. The church has never declared on that subject. And we may pray that all be saved and may even reasonably hope that all people will be saved. So it's a universalism if you want, but not of the kind of Origen, Bart, or Rob Bell variety where I know everyone's going to be saved. It's a theologically grounded, reasonable hope that all will be saved. You know, in light of that, let me say a word about C.S. Lewis, because he had one of the best images, I think, for hell. He said, the door to hell is always locked from the inside, not from the outside. It's not so much that God sends someone to hell and then locks the door. Rather, we send ourselves there. If anyone's in hell, he or she has sent himself or sent herself there and now has locked the door. I've used the image before of heaven's like this great party. It's a share in the divine life. Everyone's invited. Hell would be the state of that person who has slunk into the corner and refused to join the party, has locked himself into this dark and sad and lonely place. Not so much sent there by an avenging God, but a self-imposed exile. That's hell as a possibility. Just a last thought. Hell, you might say, is a corollary of two more fundamental teachings, namely that God is love and that we are free. You can't hold to those two, and I think everyone wants to hold to those two things, that God is love and we're free. If those are both true, you have to accept hell as a possibility because the divine love can be refused in freedom. When it's refused, it causes pain. You know, it's as simple as that. That's why Lewis again says, the love of God lights up the fires of hell. See what he means? Is the love of God resisted hurts. It pains us. But not an arbitrary imposition. It's a self-imposed exile. I think that's the best way, from the Catholic perspective, to grasp this complex issue of hell and salvation. Bottom line, we may reasonably hope that all people will be saved.